in this case, Admiral Moreau and William Casey and Taberge now, and Stephen Carr, as we mentioned, and one of the other Sheehan affidavit witnesses, and just tons and tons of people, not to mention all the people in the Pope shooting case begin to die. At a certain point, folks, one has to begin to look a little askance at all these heart attacks popping up right and left.
Yeah, again, the Atwood's fear under the circumstances should be borne in mind here.
Yeah, indeed. He knows things that we don't know, folks, so he knows exactly what happens to people who who fall out of favor with the secret team. We are going to take a break for a few minutes, and then to avoid that nasty word addendum, to the archives on the Iran-Contra case. And as we have been talking about the dovetailing, the slow connection between the Iran-Contra case, the Mediterranean merry-go-round, and a variety of other things we've been talking about.
Now, one of the killings that may have been related to the Iran-Contra scandal that we looked at in Radio Free America 33, we also looked at this killing at the tail end of RFA number 15, the second of our two programs about the World Anti-Communist League, was the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. Reading from the New York Times of Wednesday, January 20th of 1988, an article, by the way, sent into us by about a half dozen different listeners. This is a New York Times article by Steve Lohr, L-O-H-R. It's Stockholm Journal, Who Killed Olof Palme? Dogged Hunt Goes On, Dateline Stockholm, skipping down in the article. There were other theories, this about the assassination of Olof Palme. One offered by a Swedish legislator, a member of the pro-Soviet Communist Party, was that the Central Intelligence Agency was behind the assassination of Mr. Palme, a line repeated in a Soviet television documentary broadcast in Sweden. Another theory was that Mr. Palme was killed by Middle East assassins for his decision to block arms sales to Iran. Skipping down on the story, possible international links to the Palme killing are also being pursued. For example, Mr. Carlson, that's Ulf Carlson, the top official of the Swedish National Police Board investigating the assassination. Possible international links to the Palme killing are also being pursued. For example, Mr. Carlson noted that the Swedish investigators had made two trips to the United States to follow special leads, unquote. According to a person familiar with the investigation, one of the trips was to question an inmate of a California prison who claimed to have information that the Palme killing had been plotted by a right-wing international anti-communist organization, but carried out by Swedes. Well, at least two of those theses, in fact, three of them, were echoed in part or whole in RFA number 33, namely that the sent, in fact, that all three could very easily be connected. The World Anti-Communist League, along with the Central Intelligence Agency, were very much involved in the Contra supply effort, and an element of the Contra supply effort, obviously, were the proceeds from the Iranian arms sales. One of the things that we looked at in RFA 15 were accounts that Ustashi elements, the same Croatian fascist organization of which Andrija Artukovic, the aforementioned Artukovic, was a part, were initially blamed for the Palme assassination. Residual Ustashi elements have worked with the U.S. National Security Establishment and the World Anti-Communist League in the past. Now, one of the interesting links between the Swedish Iran gate, that is the Bofors Company's arms sales to Iran, which Olof Palme attempted to block, and the Italian Iran gate, the Valsella Meccano Tecnica case, which in turn dovetails in a half dozen different ways with the U.S. Iran gate, and we're going to go into more of that this evening. Many of the mines that Valsella Meccano Tecnica bought, and which ultimately wound up in the Persian Gulf, and which our ships and the Italian ships are now there clearing, came from Bofors, so that the Swedish, Italian, and American Iran gates all link up, and we're going to look at some more of those link-ups tonight.
And which reminds me, we don't have an article, but I don't know if we haven't talked about it yet, but Rosano Brazzi was acquitted, along with 17 of his other 29 defendants in the Stibom case that we've been talking about at some length, and we will probably get into that later on. Now, as Dave mentioned, we have several Iran-Contra scandals, or Iran scandals anyway, coming together and becoming what could almost be called Iran-Contra Scandal 2, although it's pretty early for a sequel, but you know how the modern world is these days. You have a big hit, you got to get the sequel out right away. Dave mentioned the two specific links The Italian Valsella Meccano Tecnica scandal and the Swedish Bofors scandal. Now, these things have to be put in the context we've been talking about tonight, about Oliver North's involvement not only with people like the World Anti-Communist League and various groups of that sort, but Oliver North's contacts with people like Mansour al-Qassar and other folks like the good folks involved in things like the Achille Lauro case, the Achille Lauro hijacking, and things of that nature. One has to wonder when somebody like Olaf Palme, who already was a noted opponent of United States foreign policy in things like the Vietnam War and other cases, and was known as among the right-wingers as having a soft spot towards communism and things of that nature for his unwillingness to constantly be in confrontation with everybody left of center. When Olaf Palme also began to insert himself into things like the Swedish Bofors scandal, which is part of this whole mess, and things like that, it's very likely that any number of people, the World Anti-Communist League, or some of their links into the Middle East, could have decided to put an end to Olaf Palme. Olaf Palme was not the only person who's died in this scandal. There was the admiral, whose name skips my mind right now, who fell under a train.
Algernon.
Algernon, yes.
Was pushed, according to many witnesses.
Oh, yes. Well, I was saying fell in the kind of broad sense of
fell,
the word.
Fell in the Banco Ambrosiano sense of fell.
Yes, exactly. Admiral Algernon, who was being questioned specifically about the Bofors case and about possible connections between the Bofors case and the assassination of Olaf Palme. And like so many other people involved in this thing, himself became an obituary candidate. And was, as Dave mentioned, pushed, not fell, pushed in front of a train in Stockholm. Now, another person involved in the Pope shooting case has joined the long list of the departed. Again, the key thing here is that we're not only talking about the Pope shooting anymore, but we're talking about connections becoming apparent in part because of the Valsella Meccano Tecnica case between the Pope shooting and our own Iran-Contra scandal, including the Swiss Iran-Contra scandal as well. So when somebody who was involved in the Pope shooting case suddenly winds up dead, it's not necessarily anymore just because of their involvement in the Pope shooting. It could very well be because of their knowledge of connections between the Pope shooting, as we mentioned, and the likes of Theodore Shackley and Oliver North et al. To the Iran-Contra case. Anyway, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, the Pope shooting case is merging with the Iran-Contra scandal in a big way. We're now going to present a series of articles that will detail that.
Indeed.
We talked about it, by the way, in RFA 32 and 34 as well.
This first section here is, this first article is from the San Francisco Chronicle for Saturday, January 2nd, 1988. The article is headlined, Man Linked to 81 Attack on Pope is Found Dead. It's a UPI Wire story out of Ankara, Turkey. A man linked to the 1981 assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II has been found dead in a jail in eastern Turkey, the Anatolian news agency said yesterday. Samet Aslan, A-S-L-A-N, was found dead in a prison toilet on Wednesday with a sheet wrapped around his neck, assistant prosecutor Hussein Kaya said. Aslan was suspected of being a member of the Grey Wolves, a rightist terrorist organization, and was being held in prison while being tried for alleged offenses in Turkey in 1978, including murder and possession of explosives. Aslan was also on the international wanted list because of his alleged links with Mehmet Ali Agha, the right-wing terrorist now in jail in Italy for shooting the Pope in Rome, St. Peter's Square, in May of 1981. Observers speculated that he had been silenced because he was about to give details of the assassination attempt on the Pope to lighten his sentence when his trial ends. Details of why the attempted assassination was carried out are still not known. Those jailed for the attack have refused to reveal the full story. Although questioned, Aslan was never tried for his alleged involvement. Well, besides the mere fact of another link in the chain being removed, becoming a missing link, as it were. There's one of the little kind of sidebar interesting things about this story is this is the first time that I have seen Mehmet Ali Agha referred to as a rightist terrorist. So the Bulgarian case, the Bulgarian theory, which of course was utterly false, but was promulgated to great effect by primarily people in the Reagan administration, like Michael Ledeen, is at last beginning to unravel. Of course, the damage is done from a propaganda point of view. But it is interesting that the UPI in particular, a fairly prestigious organization, has in this article anyway, backed down off of the, you know, Mehmet Ali Agha, Bulgarian, you know, paid terrorist, et cetera, and referred to him as a rightist terrorist, and that details of the assassination as why it were carried out are not known.
Probably the most significant thing about the Aslam death is the timing of this particular death, because as the Iran-Contra scandal has unfolded, and as the so-called Italian-Iran gate, Valsala Meccanotecnica, many links with the Pope shooting have unraveled, and as the Iran-Contra scandal dovetails with the Pope shooting, we should be looking for more deaths in connection with both scandals, since the two, in fact, intersect. Now, a major intersection between the two, the first part of it was uncovered and is already in our archives. The first add-on to Radio Free America number 34 took place the week after RFA 34 itself and consists of a number of different Italian translations provided to us by Dave, not myself, but a fellow named Dave who does Italian translations for us. One of the many blockbusters in the at the first add-on to RFA number 34 was a revelation by a fellow named Paul Varidel, W-A-R-I-D-E-L or V-A-R-I-D-E-L, a Turkish national involved in a Pizza Connection 1 case, that is to say the mafia-linked heroin smuggling operation linked with, among other things, E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch Pierce Fenner Smith. There then exists the very pertinent question, and it appears more and more likely that did pizza number one link up with pizza number two, a Medellin-linked cartel, also linked with the mafia and pizza outlets, this in the Washington, D.C. area. Now, interestingly enough, Paul Varidel has revealed that Oral Çelik, one of the gray wolves involved with Mehmet Ali Agha and Aslan, was in fact a guy named Oral Çelik was operating under the alias of Avni Musululu or Avni Yasar Musululu.
I just wanted to mention, too, because we're going to be dealing, this man Çelik has many different names. I wanted to just first off mention that his name, the one that we've been using for him primarily all along, Oral Çelik, is spelled O-R-A-L. C-E-L-I-K, and we sometimes say Jelik or Çelik or whatever, but it's C-E-L-I-K. So if you see it in an article, that's who they're referring to. As Dave mentioned, he's also known as Avni Musululu, as Yasar Musululu, and in another article we're going to read tonight as Yasar Karadurmus. So the man gets around, just like Ed and Frank, and has a lot of names to go with his many different hats.
So whatever name we look at him by, the point is it's the same fellow, and he's been involved in a lot of different things. A poppy by any other name will fetch just the same price on the black market, I guess you could say,
yeah.
Corrupting Shakespeare in an appropriate context here. Research credit for the following story also goes to Mae Brussel. Now, Mae put together the second part of this connection when this past week she and Barbara Honegger were going over some old files, and they came across an article from the New York Times from April 1st of 1986, and this ties up the Oral Çelik, a.k.a. Avni Yasar Musululu ties this up very, very neatly with the Pizza Connection case. Again, New York Times, April 1st, 1986. This is research credit for this is goes to Mae Brussel. This is by Arnold Lubash, L-U-B-A-S-C-H, of the New York Times. Headline, trial is told drug suspect received millions in cash. A deposition saying that a major heroin suspect received millions of dollars in cash was presented yesterday in the Pizza Connection trial. The deposition came from testimony in Switzerland by Paul Varidel, W-A-R-I-D-E-L, a Swiss citizen who admitted collecting more than $11 million for the suspect in Switzerland. He identified the suspect as Yasar Musululu, M-U-S-U-L-L-U-L-U, a Turkish fugitive accused of supplying morphine base for heroin to mafia leaders in Sicily. The deposition from Mr. Varidel, who was being held in Switzerland on related charges, was read to the jury in Federal District Court in Manhattan. The prosecution contends that the 22 defendants in the trial operated a mafia heroin ring that laundered money, millions of dollars, that laundered many millions of dollars in drug money, including $20 million, sent to Switzerland through trading accounts at E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith. A prosecutor, Louis J. Free, F-R-E-E-H, presented testimony and documents to show that the $20 million was transferred from the United States to Switzerland through the brokerage accounts in 1982. The brokerage concerns are not charged with any crime. Mr. Worriedell said in his deposition that he had picked up more than $11 million, most of it in cash, for Mr. Musalulu. He recalled collecting $5 million at one meeting in Lugano, Switzerland in 1982. There was a mountain of money, Mr. Worriedell said, adding that it was United States currency in stacks of 20s, 50s, and 100s that filled six suitcases, which he delivered to Mr. Musalulu's home in Zurich. When asked if he was personally involved in picking up some $11 million of drug money, he said, yes. Well, he said at another point, the money I have seen and transported are $5 million here in Lugano, once $3 and once $2 million in Zurich, physical money, and once this $1.5 million in checks. The money involved payments to Mr. Musalulu for about 2,200 pounds of morphine base, Mr. Worriedell said. Surely I knew that morphine base gets converted into heroin, he said. I must have learned, he said, that Musalulu has relationships with Sicilians and suppliers of morphine base, unquote. The 44-year-old witness, who was born in Turkey and lived in Switzerland for many, many years, has said he became a confidant of Mr. Musalulu. He said he learned that Mr. Musalulu had received many more millions of dollars for supplying morphine base. In another deposition earlier in the trial, Franco Della Torre, who was also a suspect arrested in Switzerland, said he had delivered bags of cash to brokerage concerns in Manhattan for men identified by the prosecution as associates of the drug ring. He said he did not know he was delivering drug money, but was told that it was, quote, black money, unquote, from restaurants and others who wanted to avoid taxes by moving the money secretly to Switzerland. In September of 1982, I stopped going to New York to receive money, he said, after an official at E.F. Hutton had disclosed that, quote, the FBI was getting interested in our account in the United States, unquote. That's E.F. Hutton, folks. And again, research credit for the following article also goes to Mae Brussel, just by way of updating Oral Çelik, A.K. Avni Yasar Musalulu's involvement with the Pope shooting. This from the New York Times of July 13th of 1986. It's by John Taliabu of the New York Times. Turk in Rome case details smuggling, just very briefly skipping down. The Turk here is Bekir Çelenk, not to be confused with Oral Çelik. Bekir Çelenk, also apparently associated with U.S. Secret Services, possibly the DEA, certainly Stibom, certainly at this point the grave, because he was one of a number of prison casualties along with Mr. Aslan and Mr. Arsan, the DEA agent who ran Stibom.
And Bekir Çelenk was also the paymaster for the operation, the assassination attempt on the Pope.
Besides denying he ever knew Mr. Raja, Mr. Çelenk also denied knowing Oral Çelik, another Turk who Mr. Raja says was engaged by Mr. Çelenk and took part in the shooting of the Pope. So the web grows more and more tangled. We now have the Pizza Connection case, which may be connected with Pizza Connection 2. It appears more and more probable, and this hooks up in a big way now with the shooting of the Pope. Of course, now, at the time that much of these machinations are being executed, E.F. Hutton is headed up at the time by Scott Pierce, brother-in-law of, George Bush, and the head of Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith at this time is Donald Regan, up until recently White House Chief of Staff. When Pizza Connection 2, the New York-based, mafia-based cocaine, although it also distributed heroin operation out of pizzerias in New York City, or in Washington, D.C., this link with the Medellin cartel, within a couple of weeks, Scott Pierce stepped down from E.F. Hutton, and Donald Regan resigned or was dismissed as White House Chief of Staff, replaced, I think is the polite word.
Yeah.
And so, again, with the movement there, as with the movement of Mr. Tavares into his grave at about the time that Manuel Noriega is moving out of favor with the U.S., again, the name Bush and some of these connections keeps coming up.
Yes, apparently when the gray wolves speak, E.F. Hutton listens, and kudos to Mae Brussel for tracking this article down, because it is a Lulu. And again,
a Musalulu.
A Musalulu. so true. And some fascinating stuff. And, of course, things that we have been looking at for months, in some cases years, as being very similar and rather interesting looking and perhaps connected, certainly connected by type and kind, are now beginning to pull in together. So, as Dave mentioned, there are two Pizza Connection cases. Pizza Connection 1, the heroin case that has now had Avni Yasar, or Yasar Avni Musalulu, tied into it. Again, remember, his real name being Oral Shalik, and he has was involved with Mehmet Ali Ajah and with the attempted assassination of the Pope, according to many sources. Pizza Connection 2 being the cocaine case, which has already been tied into the Medellin cartel and through the Medellin cartel, presumably to the Contra supply effort, which ties it back into the Iran-Contra case. Again, as mentioned, the Pope case, the Mediterranean merry-go-round, has been inextricably tied into the Iran-Contra case as well. So more and more, as we said, these seemingly separate islands are being revealed to have underwater connections between them, and they are in fact all part of one large peninsula, to continue the analogy a bit. Again, talking about some of these people, another rather interesting series of things, talking about these same people and the same connections, and we're going to get back and keep elaborating on this. These are from our translator named Dave, not the Dave sitting next to me, but a Dave who has been helping us for some time.
These, by the way, were in the first add-on to RFA number 34, which took place just about a week later when we got these translations, and they immediately went into the archives. We're going to review just some of these, where there were a lot of other doozies as well. Those are already on the master for RFA 34.
This first one is from Corriere della Sera for June 18th of 1987, and it reads as follows. According to Paul Waridel, a Turkish dealer turned informant who lived in Switzerland for a long time and who now lives in Athens, Oral Çelik is currently in Sofia working for organizations engaged in the drug traffic. Between 1981 and 1983, Çelik, under the false name of Avni Musalulu, coordinated from his offices in Zurich the payments for and deliveries of hundreds of kilos of drugs consigned by the Sicilian bands of Greco and Santa Paolo for United States markets. Before Dave reads the next article, I wanted to comment on a couple of things here. One of the things that's rather interesting is finding out that Oral Çelik is working out of Sofia, Bulgaria. Of course, Bulgaria and the Bulgarian drug connection was being waved around during the early parts of the Pope shooting case as being the proof that the Soviet Union was behind the assassination attempt on the Pope, and the fact that apparently that this drug chain did move through Bulgaria was used as proof that it was complicity by the Bulgarian authorities and by insinuation by the Soviet authorities. Well, as we have seen tonight and talked about, the fact that large amounts of weaponry move out of the Eastern Bloc countries and into places where they can do the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc the most possible harm. In other words, the kind of thing that the Soviet Union would not want to do. The last thing the Soviet Union would want to do is have a bunch of their Kalashnikov rifles show up in El Salvador as, you know, supposedly having come from the Sandinistas. So obviously the Soviet Union, as we've seen, is not doing these things. So somebody is able to move drugs. We know that part of these chains and that Mehmet Ali Aja's movements went through Bulgaria. Now we're beginning to see that, in fact, it looks like there is a Western intelligence-slash-drug-and-gun-running operation in place in Bulgaria, of all places, in the Eastern Bloc.
Against that background, it might be worth remembering a couple of things. First of all, Bulgaria was an Axis nation during World War II. One of the things we look at with the Galen Organization and its various tentacles are the revanchist East Europeans. It would be probable to assume that somewhere within Bulgaria, including its national security establishment, would be some residual fascist elements. Bulgaria was an Axis nation, fought against the United States and the Soviet Union in World War II. It's not that unusual to suppose there might be some elements there that might collaborate with the Galen Organization, as well as with the fact that obviously there are people who are corrupt and will go for profit. Turkey gets a lot of its water from Bulgaria, and there are, I don't know how many millions, but more than a million Turks each year, something like 2 million, I think, transit across Bulgaria on the way to West Germany. In other words, there is a great deal of transit and traffic through and between the various countries, it should not be that surprising, therefore, to find criminal associations in these countries trafficking in contraband, whereas there is the above-board traffic of the type we've just mentioned.
It also begins to raise some other interesting questions, and without wanting to get too far afield, it makes one think of some of the arguments in Erna Paris's book, Unhealed Wounds, and she talks about the massive collaboration going on behind the scenes between, again, as Dave mentioned, various fascist organizations, revanchist organizations, and Middle Eastern, quote, leftist or, quote, Marxist or, quote, whatever, liberation organizations. Now, one of the problems with the fascists, I would imagine that the fascists and these liberation organizations have, is that those uncorrupted elements in the Western nations, the security forces, and there are some, thank goodness, probably keep a very close eye on people from the PLO and other types of things when they can find them coming into the country and keep a very close watch on them. However, the PLO and other groups of that sort, and groups purporting to be like the PLO, have long had connections into Eastern Europe because of their supposed, you know, revolutionary or liberationist philosophies. Therefore, if you have a large operation, a fascist operation in place somewhere like Bulgaria, how very easy it would be to travel in and out and to make contacts between these Middle Eastern organizations, such as the ones we've been talking about, Oliver North having connections to, and some of these Eastern European fascists.
Okay, now, a couple of the other articles here, again, by way of detailing the background for some of the connections now that are developing between the Pope shooting, the secret team, the Grey Wolves, and so forth. Aral Chalik is operating under the name of Avni Musululu. He also apparently, under that name, is also operating, or has at times operated, with the DEA. Again, from Dave and from La Repubblica, July 25th of 1985, even Aral Chalik, it said, may have collaborated with the DEA, making possible numerous arrests in Europe, including that of Ajah's alleged accomplice, Omer Ayi, in Germany. A number of people connected with Stibom have operated in connection with DEA, including Henry Arsan himself. What was the name? One of Klaus Barbie's fiancés, Joachim Fiebelkorn, worked as DEA. A man named Tegmen Herten, one of Arsan's business partners that we talked about in the first addendum, worked for DEA and others.
Bashir Chalank. Bashir
yep.
Chalank himself,
yep.
the late Bashir Chalank. Okay, continuing with yet another translation. This from La Repubblica for November 27th of 1986. Paul Waridel, the Swiss trafficker of Turkish origin, turned informant, but still got a 13-year sentence for drugs. Waridel saw Giuseppe Ferreira in Zurich in 1983 and knew that the Catanese mafia boss had contacted the Turk Avni Yasar Musululu to buy a ship, the Dusk. The boat cost $800,000. Ferreira deposited the money from the Swiss Popular Bank of Chiasso in Waridel's account. Waridel then made provisions to switch the money to Musululu's account.
This by way of illustrating that Avni Yasar Musululu is the same person. That it was the name Yasar Musululu in the New York Times article.
And we've got yet one more name coming up for him in the next article.
From L'Europeo of November 28th of 1987. Directing the traffic in the Zurich station, the super fugitive Yasar Karadurmas, Karadurmus, known on the platform as Avni Musululu, European representative for the Turkish family of Seal and for the legendary Kun Sa, the undisputed lord of the opium in the Golden Triangle. Kun Sa's real name is Chang Chi Fu. His career began at the end of the 50s with the fledgling government of Rangoon entrusted the army with the task of pacifying the uncertain borders of that country. Dismissed for his ferocity, he had his personal barber hung and quartered for defacing a tree. In 1956, Kun Sa established the Shan United Army, SUA, and began his personal war. In 1967, he became an opium warlord. Today, he controls 80% of world production. Sworn enemy of the Kuomintang, he wants to unite all the major traffickers under one flag. He's already in touch with the Chinese Triad and the Japanese Yakuza, and continues to work with the Turk Avni Musululu and the Bulgarian firm Kintex. So Avni Musululu basically is identified here as a very close associate of Kun Sa. And Avni Musululu is the European representative for Kun Sa. Again, the first paragraph, directing the traffic in the Zurich station, the super fugitive Yasar Karadurmas, known on the platform as Avni Musululu, European representative for the Turkish family of Seal and for the legendary Kun Sa, the undisputed lord of the opium in the Golden Triangle. And Kun Sa is hooked up with another interesting name, one that has figured out many, many times.
Yes,
in the past.
And when we talk about the fact that we have a man by the name of Oral Çelik, intimately linked to the man who attempted to shoot John Paul II, one of the organizations that apparently was involved, or was almost certainly involved in the assassination attempt on John Paul II, was a group called the Super Sisme, headed up by General Giuseppe Santovito. And just before the Pope was shot, as we have mentioned in the past, he was making overtures to the Soviet Union about settling some of the problems in Poland, and was also beginning to make contact with the PLO, interestingly enough. He got a visit from a man by the name of, not he, but General Giuseppe Santovito of the Super Sisme, the fascist internal intelligence organization within the normal Italian intelligence organization. General Giuseppe Santovito got a visit from a man very familiar to One Step Beyond listeners by the name of Theodore Shackley. Now, when you put that all together with Kun Sa, it becomes rather interesting, and we're going to talk about that.
Now, bear in mind, as we looked at in RFA 21, the Kremlin and the Vatican were achieving a diplomatic rapprochement. Neither the Pope, who was a Polish nationalist, as well as having some overt fascist connections, did not want a war in Poland. Neither, obviously, did the Soviet Union. Both also were working towards disarmament in certain respects. This was in February of 1981 that Shackley goes to work with Santovito. Then we find Oral Çelik of the Grey Wolves involved with the shooting of the Pope a few months later. There are apparent links between the Super Sisme and the shooting of the Pope as well. And bear in mind the Oral Çelik link to Kun Sa.
Now, we're going to read a section from an article, credit for this article to Mae Brussel, who provided it to us. It's from In These Times for November 17th, 1987. It's an article entitled Fitz, From Burma to Bush, A Heroin Trail. The Burma we've already talked about, that's the Burma where Kun Sa lives. The Bush they're talking about is George Bush, who is one of the people being included in the accusations of one Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz. So the Lieutenant Colonels come in all shapes and sizes. They come in the Oliver North shape and size, and the Bo Greitz shape and size. Bo Greitz started out very much like an Ollie North, but he has found out some things that have apparently changed his mind.
Did you give the author for this particular article, Dave?
Not yet.
Good old Tom Fitz there.
Right, Tom Fitzpatrick. And again, Bo Greitz, B-O, first name, last name, G-R-I-T-Z, like grits, but apparently pronounced Greitz, a lieutenant colonel and a special forces guy who's begun to find out some interesting things about the country and the security establishment he's been fighting for most of his life. Anyway, jumping into the middle of the article. Recently, Bo Greitz began, the White House asked me to go to Burma to see if I could arrange a meeting with General Kun Sa, who is the world overlord of heroin. General Kun Sa controls everything that comes out of the so-called Golden Triangle. This year, the figure will be 900 tons of opium. I went to see Kun Sa because he supposedly knew where some American prisoners were being held. This, by the way, was what started Bo Greitz on this whole odyssey, was his quest for American missing in action prisoners. The CIA didn't think I could penetrate the region and make it safely to a meeting with a general, but it wasn't as hard as they thought, and I brought along recording equipment so I could videotape our meeting for the White House. Unquote. Greitz is a natural storyteller. The room becomes hushed. Greitz allows his story to unfold naturally. At our first meeting, Greitz says, I learned there were no POWs in the vicinity. I almost turned around and came home. At about 1:30 in the morning, I woke up unable to sleep. I ran into one of my assistants. Tell me I'm crazy, I said. Our mission is finished. We should head back to Washington now. But we're the first Americans ever to be in the headquarters of the world's biggest heroin overlord. Why don't I ask him about the drug trafficking? My associate looked at me with a glance that told me I was treading on dangerous ground. I knew what he meant. We could bring the mob down on us. If there were corrupt government officials involved, they would have to destroy us for finding them out. My assistant smiled. He knew me pretty well. You're going to ask him, aren't you? He said. Another meeting with General Kun Sa was arranged. Video cameras were set up. Bo Greitz and his two assistants sat at one end of a low table. General Kun Sa sat 8 feet away. The general was accompanied by an interpreter and 10 aides. quote, "The general told me that 12 years ago there was only 60 tons of heroin coming out of the Golden Triangle of Burma, Laos, and Cambodia every year. By last year it was up to 700 tons, and this year it will be 900. They have now even been able to build a modern highway coming out of Khun Sa's area, and so next year it will be 1,200 tons. This is worth uncounted billions of dollars on the streets of New York City. But Khun Sa himself hates drugs and doesn't allow any of his people to take them. Khun Sa has found a sure way to stop drug addiction. He orders drug addicts beheaded. Khun Sa told me he was willing to stop all the drug traffic. He wanted me to bring a message to the White House. All Khun Sa wanted was economic aid from Washington so he could legitimize his own economy and help in gaining national sovereignty. I asked Khun Sa if he had been dealing with any American officials who bought drugs over the years. Khun Sa looked at his books. He began reading names. The warlord read the name of Richard Armitage, now an assistant defense secretary who was once the CIA station chief in Saigon. Armitage is now an assistant secretary of defense. Then Khun Sa read the name of Theodore Shackley, also a former CIA officer who directed a drug operation with Salvatore Traficante of the Mafia. The money raised was used to finance the secret U.S. war in Laos from 1965 to 1979. Skipping down. My primary interest, this is Greit speaking again, my primary interest for years has been bringing home the prisoners of war that I'm still convinced are being held in the Far East. But the reason they can't be allowed to come home is because one of the men in charge was Richard Armitage, the same man identified by Danny Sheehan of the Christic Institute in his suit and by General Khun Sa as the bag man in the dope deals through the years. Armitage is now the Assistant Secretary of Defense, and the man who has been protecting him over the years is another former CIA man, Mr. Carlucci. And, of course, the CIA man in question is Frank Carlucci, who is now the Secretary of Defense, excuse me, and a man who was universally lauded by the Congress over his lifelong record of public service and his unwillingness to be involved in smarmy deals and things of that sort. And, of course, here we have the firsthand testimony of Khun Sa, a man who should know, being cited by Beau Greitz, a man who was there. Testifying to Mr. Carlucci's protection of Richard Armitage, a smack dealer, to put it quite simply, an assistant secretary of defense, but also a smack dealer, along with Theodore Shackley.
Along with Oral Chalik, apparently. And it's interesting that Oral Chalik is involved, according to Ajay, in the shooting of the Pope. Again, Theodore Shackley going to work with the Super Sees Me at that time. According to the Christic Institute, Theodore Shackley, part of the secret team involved with the transferring of heroin from the Medellin cartel as well, in conjunction with the Contra supply effort from John Hull's ranch. So an interesting collection of people, and again, this suggesting very strongly that Pizza Connection 1, in fact, will hook up with Pizza Connection 2.
And we're also beginning to see what, again, is still at a very early stage here, but the lineaments of, as I talked earlier about in the broadcast, I hate the kind of idea of massive monolithic conspiracies because they put people off. But what we're beginning to look at is not so much a
monolithic conspiracy, but a massive conspiracy.
A massive conspiracy,
yeah.
That has been going on, as we mentioned. Well, of course, the whole thing in general, a lot of the connections, as we mentioned, are firmly rooted in World War II. But specifically, a large part of this operation started, as they mentioned, during the Vietnam War, when Theodore Shackley was station chief in Saigon and became involved in the Laotian drug traffic, among other things, and began using it to finance these secret aspects of the Phoenix program and other sorts of CIA assassination operations. And basically, when they got done, they realized, hey, even though we've lost most of the war in Vietnam, this is a real useful way to get money to fund fascism worldwide, and has been going on ever since. And the whole Iran-Contra case is only basically the back of the monster kind of appearing for a moment from beneath the water, but it has been there all along. It has been a source of knowledge to people like Frank Turple and Ed Wilson for years, and apparently it has been the source of, as we have talked about in the past, has been the source of the funding for virtually every dirty operation that the, quote, secret team has been involved in for some 20 years.
Yeah, and again, we looked at a lot of Nazi connections with the Pope shooting, too. Recall Ruzi Nazar, former SS Punishment Battalion member, hooked up with Paul Henze, among others. And a lot of the Grey Wolves themselves, of course, the Turkish Turkish Nazi Party, and with very strong, long historical links with not only the Third Reich, but also the CIA.
It also puts a book that we have used a great deal on this show into even sharper perspective, and that is Henrik Krüger's The Great Heroin Coup, which talks about the fact that in the early and middle 1970s that the Nixon administration basically overthrew the then dominant the leaders of the heroin trade and turned over the heroin trade to the Golden Triangle. Well, as we look at it now, it becomes very apparent. It's because we had control over the heroin trade in the Golden Triangle, and it was essentially our bank to go to, just like an automatic teller machine at any time of the day or night when we needed a couple of $1 million of dirty money, and we wanted to keep it under our control. So basically, the Nixon administration ran a hit on the folks running the old heroin trade, just like in The Godfather, and they took it over themselves, and we're still using it.
Why don't we see? We probably won't have time for phone calls. We have three articles left, and what do you think?
I don't think we'll really have time, so we'll just go ahead and read them.
Read our articles, and then give our announcements and pack it on.
And make it up next week, yeah.
It sure is nice, isn't it, to be done with a Radio Free America show, so we don't have any more of these long documentary shows to do. Yes.
Yeah, what would we do if we had to do more long documentary
shows? I can't imagine. Probably continue to read articles like the one we're about to read.